Welcome to Delightfully Dysfunctional, a podcast about navigating the emotions of the human condition and the challenges that come with it. I'm Kaylani Persian Mason, a psychotherapist and life coach with James Timmons and Ever Curious Human. This is not a replacement for mental health therapy. Please seek out mental health care if that's what you're needing. This is an opportunity for self-healers to dive deep and understand more about themselves. Hello, delightful humans. Welcome back to Delightfully Dysfunctional. I'm Kaylani and this is James. And we are excited to jump into our topic of narcissism today.
I was going to do the smolder, but I backed out.
I'm gonna set you up for a moment for the smolder. Don't worry.
Okay.
It's going to happen.
Should that just be the intro?
Should that be?
From now on?
Here we go. So I think right when I say your name. Okay. So let's try it again. Okay, ready? Okay, here we go. Hello, delightful humans. Welcome to the Hello, delightful humans. Welcome to Delightfully Dysfunctional. I'm Kaylani, and this is my co-host, James Timmons.
Describe it for the listeners.
For the listeners out there, this is a hard smolder that James is pulling out. There's a lot
rough.
Of eyebrow. There's a lot of eyebrow action. There's some pouty lips, I suppose. It's a lot.
It's a lot to unpack.
His example was of Ryder in Entangled.
Flynn Rider.
Flynn Rider. Uh-huh. There's that smolder scene. I referenced The Rock in Jumanji when there's like boom, boom. And then he's like, he's got it going on. But that's what's happening here. And it's just a lot. It's going to guarantee you an eye roll every time. So if you're willing to...
A
hard eye roll. If you know that that's coming from me, then I guess you smolder on.
Way to paint the picture. I think our listeners are going to be thankful for that. We might see an uptick in our YouTube views. So anyway, I'm sorry. Okay. We might not use that. But...
I feel like there's always I want to catch up on my life. I want us to like have a little chit chat.
Yeah.
And so, I feel like we should have a story time.
Okay.
Do you have anything on your mind first? I want to check in with you. That's what I do in sessions. I'm always like, please tell me today. Is there anything that was on your mind to discuss?
No.
Okay. Wonderful. Then I had some things in the back of my mind. This is my therapy voice. It's a little bit softer.
It's good. I feel comfortable.
Comforted and safe. Uh-huh. Good. That's the idea. So let me think here. I was telling you in the past couple episodes we've recorded about really looking into PhD programs.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm kind of stalling out, but I feel like I might be looking into possibly some like new programs I'm excited about, some Gottman training, some internal family systems, and then I just registered for a training on psychedelics.
Oh, yeah.
It freaks you out, doesn't it, James?
It does.
I know.
Well, okay, I'm down for anything, okay? So if you get all into psychedelics and you guys want to, like, watch me real-time trip out on this podcast, I will do it. For
science.
Audience.
You'll do it for the likes.
I will do it.
He has dedicated his body to science.
Yeah, I've dedicated my body to science. Yep. I've also dedicated it to dancing.
Oh, God.
Sorry. No. Yeah, okay, so you mentioned Gottman, who we're both super fans of. And do you get to meet them?
Do I get? No, that'd be great. I mean, they're in Seattle.
Yeah. There's a chance.
We could rally. We could rally. No, but I did. So I completed the 7 principles of making marriage work. And one thing I did want to mention is that I will be co-hosting a retreat. I'll be leading. My husband, Zach, and our producer will actually be co-leading with me.
Oh, sweet.
And we're calling it the Intentional Love Workshop because it's not just for people who are married. Anyone in a long-term committed relationship can attend. But I feel like these are such important principles for just understanding ourselves and really giving, like, give yourself the information so you know how to navigate having a happy, healthy relationship.
Yeah.
So there'll be more information on that coming up too. That's an exciting thing, a little project that we've been working on. It'll be here in Richland, Washington. And stay tuned. There'll be more information on that.
Awesome.
Okay. So narcissism. I feel like narcissism is a really big topic. A lot of people have been able to identify like narcissistic people in their life. Yeah. And I love that there is some more definition and science going into how do we like categorize different narcissists. So I want to describe a few different types. Okay. And then we can both share.
I'll figure out which one I am.
I will diagnose you. Okay. For sure. Yeah. And then we'll figure out if maybe there's people in our lives too, or even celebrities that come up when we think about. So grandiose narcissism. This type of narcissism is characterized by a grandiose and exaggerated sense of self-importance, entitlement, and superiority. So they might be arrogant and boastful. They might be domineering or have a lack of empathy for others. It's like very much, I'm the best thing since sliced bread.
Okay.
Do you think of any, is there anyone that comes to mind that has that? I want to think about some people in my life too. I feel like our listeners, if there's anyone in your life, like, let us know. You don't have to give their names and call them out.
I was going
to
say, I just want to know,
like, do you, let me know if you feel me.
Yeah, I can think of, I mean, I honestly know that I've demonstrated those behaviors in my life, but I wouldn't say that I consistently do.
Yeah.
But definitely, I can think of a handful of people.
Can I ask you a vulnerable question?
Yes.
In our podcast has been getting more attention than I had originally anticipated, and it's so exciting and lovely. Thank you so much, dear listeners. But I've wondered in the back of my mind, since you have identified in the past getting like praise and that is kind of, I know
question.
I am, it's your kryptonite, James. And how is it feeling for you? Cause we both, the other day when we met to talk about the podcast, I shared how I was feeling and we have some differences. So that's my question for you. How is that experience?
I mean, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. I mean, yeah, I'm excited about it, but I'm very, very mindful that that used to be like a thing that I used, you know, I used to have an ego about, cause I mean, but it, thankfully I've experienced in my life, like success in creative things. Like I've done music and, you know, gotten record deal and all that stuff. And so, but then that I failed in that. So I've like gotten to like experience a life of creative success. So I know like, not to allow, well, okay, so I'm excited that it's getting a lot of attention and success, but I'm not, I've like decided that I'm never going to be like satisfied with it, you know, just I want it to grow even larger, you know, and but like the whole mission of what we're doing is really trying to like reach people and help people and save lives or whatever, you know, and so that's kind of the motivation. So when it's like a, it's a weird response because I see how people are really resonating with it. And that's exciting because I know that it's benefiting them, you know? So it's like, I'm not getting like an ego from it. If that's.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally answering my question though. And I love that, that there's a mindfulness, there's a self-awareness that needs to happen. If we do notice any of the narcissistic qualities that are there to be present. So I think that you're doing the right thing. And there's even like a hint too in what you shared that's like, I have to be a little bit grateful for my failures because they've helped me be healthier in my mindset. They've helped me buffer from falling into a pattern that can get me stuck.
Totally. If this had happened 20 years ago, absolutely, I'd have an ego about it. You know?
Yeah. Oh God, me too.
I'd be like, do you guys know who I am?
I'm kind of a big deal. And then the smolder right after. Do you know what I am? Oh, gosh. Okay. So we're going to move on to the next one, but that was great. Thank you for being vulnerable and having that chat with me.
Thank you for feeling safe to ask that question.
Yeah. Love it. So vulnerable narcissism, also known as covert narcissism. And I'm really excited to describe this one more. It sounds so weird to say. I'm so excited to describe this type of narcissism. It's going to be so
nerds
great.
In this stuff, so.
Yeah, I guess that's why. Totally. But someone who has really fragile self-esteem, but is also highly sensitive and to criticism, to rejection, and they might become very manipulative because they just have this deep need for validation and attention. So it becomes very needy, very draining, kind of like an energy vampire. Like that is kind of how I might describe this person too. So they can use a lot of manipulation and guilt tripping to, you know, again, like, woe is me, I'm helpless, like learned helplessness, but then not knowing how to have integrity, like walk the walk, talk the talk. So when I think about that, there are some people that come into mind. There's a family member of mine. And what's really unfortunate, I think this is an example with this family member of kind of the sad side of narcissism. Some of it is a biological factor and just like traits of extroversion, introversion that can be inherited from someone. There's no way for us to really know like by percentage, but narcissism can be that way too. Mm-hmm. And then like nature versus nurture, it can also be learned in someone's environment and taught through someone's environment, whether they have a parent who showers them too much with like, you're the best thing ever, you're so wonderful, you're more special than anyone else, and that gives them this inflated sense of entitlement, or a child who feels like robbed of that, so they create kind of like that. I feel like the bully comparison is the easiest, where at home they are getting belittled and not given the attention or the emotional regulation that's needed. So at school, they use that as a place to like have a power difference and like flex that, because it's still a need to feel important or like you belong. So anyways, so the kind of like background into like, how might someone become a narcissist? In this case, this family member had one of the most severe cases of childhood abuse that I've ever heard of. Like there was sexual abuse, there was physical abuse, there was emotional abuse. It was a very toxic home. And because of so many adverse childhood traumatic experiences, they also had a lot of really unhealthy patterns and really unhealthy ways to manipulate the situation, because they survived that way as a child. That served them well to get their needs met for a long time. And when we're learning as a child, it's hardwired in. Like, it's not software that can be changed like a computer. It's just like it is. Your brain cells are pruning and like changing at such a fast rate that neuroplasticity, it's just much more solid when it's happening as a child. Anyways, this person has sadly like really pushed away a lot of family members because of this covert narcissism. And they also have a lot of issues when it comes to their body, which is what we know from studies as well, that if you grow up in a home where there's extreme childhood abuse and neglect, it'll show up in your body because we are one organism. So things like autoimmune diseases, fibromyalgia, a higher rate of a risk for cardiovascular disease because there's higher heart rate that happens when you're in fight, flight, freeze. Yeah. So I think that that particular family member, I think about them a lot when I think about how this is really complicated. Narcissists can also be victims. And that's a complicated thought to hold that both of those things are true at the same time.
Well, I mean, I know because like everything you're saying, the one common thread is like very self-absorbed, self-focused, you know? So yeah, there's all different types of brands of being self-focused, but yeah, a victim, it's almost like there's like a, like you put a certain characteristic on a pedestal, you know, where it's like you can be a very domineering narcissist, very introverted narcissist, but the one thing in common is that you're always thinking only about yourself above others. But like you're the family member that you shared about, like I'm sitting here like, oh, I wish I could learn way more about this person, you know, but because, I've noticed that like if somebody's a victim of abuse when they're a child, then a lot of times, you know, they become abusive and they want, it's almost like they, because they lacked control in such a severe way, they want some form of control over someone. And like, I don't know, serial killers, for example, are that way, you know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I can't speak to all serial killers. I don't specialize in serial killers, but
I say sociopath.
Hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
And that I think there needs to be an understanding that, for I'll use the family member example again. I love that family member. I have beautiful memories with that family member.
it hurts me that I have to have boundaries with them and I can't be closer, even though I would love that.
Yeah.
I know emotionally it's not safe to be that close.
For sure.
And so I have to have that boundary there. I still do what I can to stay in contact. I still send them so much love. But that's what's really sad in these situations. I can, if I crossed that boundary and said, oh, because they're a victim, I need to be more understanding and caring.
They'll take advantage of the empathy.
Yeah. And that then doesn't put me in a position where I'm taking care of myself. Yeah. And that isn't coming from a selfish place. For me, it's coming from a place of I need to have myself well balanced if I want to be able to give to my marriage, to my children, to my work, to my clients. These are the like an emotional undertaking because of the work I do. I'm very selective then about what is going to rob my energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, because like narcissists will like steamroll you and you don't. And when you are being steamrolled by a narcissist, you kind of go like, how on earth could somebody like do that and not be aware of the, how much pain they cause? But it, yeah, because it's like, well, they weren't thinking about you. They weren't thinking about how you were going
to
respond.
The goal wasn't to be a rational, reasonable person who can collaborate with another human and show care. The goal was to manipulate, to get what I want, to have boundary crossings, to exaggerate and feel more important, to gaslight, to have instability in my mood so they're walking on eggshells and then it's more easy to control, to love bomb. Like, their objective is different.
I can feel myself like starting to become triggered as you're describing all this.
Ooh, I'm sorry. I didn't give you a trigger warning before this conversation, James.
Well, I mean, if you've experienced that, then you can like see the person who did this to you clearly, and you're just like, oh gosh, you know.
There was another podcast I was listening to, and they were talking about how Americans specifically don't like being deceived and the idea of being bamboozled. I think it's interesting that it's Americans specifically, isn't that like there was like some kind of cultural component. I need to go back and listen to it. There was something specific about American culture for whatever reason. Someone find that. I think it was Armchair Expert.
Okay.
Anyways, I think that's like the pervasive feeling, isn't it? Like when I think about, I've had a couple narcissistic exes too. And like, it's the end feeling of like, you freaking bamboozled me. Like, I believed you when you said that.
Yeah. I have so many stories about a narcissistic ex, and I kind of just wanted to say them all right now, but it's like mind blowing. Like I've shared these stories with people and they're like, you could have a Netflix documentary. I'm like, really? Yeah. You think so? Just kidding.
No, well, like, oh gosh, yeah. Could we have a whole episode just like bashing our exes?
Just gossip?
Oh my God. So good. It's going to be like spilling the tea. And we have to have tea, and we need some, like, a little bit.
And then we'll have liquor where we pour some out for our homies. Sorry. That's what it reminded me of.
Oh my gosh.
No, yeah, let's do that.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Someone write it down. Okay, so then we have malignant narcissists. And so these are a combination of being like grandiose and self-important, but in terms of a community structure. So I drew a little picture when I was in my notes here that helped me remember it. And basically like picture a pyramid scheme and the person at the top of the pyramid. That's this version of communal narcissism. Mm. I'm the king of this group, and this is the best group, so I must be the best.
Okay.
I'm the leader of this group, so my ego is really just being fueled by always being right and by knowing that in this communal group, I am the best. So there'd be a lot of like really seeking admiration from this group in a way that's unhealthy and manipulative. And it's really not, it's self-serving to just get that itch scratched, not necessarily maybe aligned with the values of the group. Yeah. Like it's been lost. So
would you say like a cult leader or something?
I took note. I said cult leaders.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's in my notes specifically. But yeah, I think that that's a great example. Even there's obviously organized religions outside of cults that, you can see that happening too. I'm not in any kind of a blanketed statement, but I think that there've been a lot of unhealthy church organizations that I've heard examples of too, where that can happen easily.
Well, I mean, and I'm going to say this with caution, but like I've been very embedded in churches, you know, mm-hmm. and I've noticed that there will be people who kind of like implant themselves into the church staff, and they are very much like exhibit mm-hmm. narcissism, and then they end up like terrorizing the church culture, and then that church becomes very unhealthy and kind of divides and falls apart. And because like I say the word cult, but then I'm also envisioning like specific people in a healthy church. But it is unfortunate. I just whenever
maybe the difference too between like a healthy religious community mm-hmm. and a what we would label a cult is someone who has these more narcissistic, like manipulative behaviors at play.
Yeah.
But I think the tricky thing too is humans like power. Humans yeah. like power. So is that a normal human who came across power and that turned him into an asshole? Or is he an asshole who's narcissistic and found an opportunity to lord power over this group?
Yeah.
And it just seemed to work.
Well, I mean, narcissists are usually always looking for control over people, right?
Yes, to that self-importance means you have to have someone who thinks you're important yeah. or that you are cultivating an image of that. So that is kind of a perfect breeding ground. You can yeah. cultivate an image of being superior and perfect and et cetera, according to whatever tenets of the religion, but not really be practicing the elements of, you know, humility or whatnot that are really supposed to make you a better human. Like you can hide behind it, I yeah. think, quite easily. Well, sadly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always said the perfect government would be a socialist government with a perfect dictator. But the only thing is, there's no such thing as a perfect person, you know.
So. Maybe Zach will remember this quote too, but it has to do with like the best leaders are the ones who don't want power. But yeah. like, then who are the people who end up in power? They're the ones who want that.
Power. Exactly.
So you have to find someone who doesn't want the job and convince him to have the job. And then what does that mean? You know, that's what comes to mind when you say that. And that leads to the next one. The final type that we'll go over is collective narcissism, similar to communal, but different. So this is a broader social cultural identity. I think you can see this in like nationalism a lot more and nations or political ideologies. And now it's just like my group is superior. So yeah. instead, in the little picture that I drew, because sometimes I connect better with images, I just drew like a circle representing the group with tiny little dots representing all the individuals. I'm just going to be a narcissist about this group. Mm. The group I'm in believes this, and that's superior, and that's right, and so I don't need to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of narcissism is not being curious and just making assumptions based on what you want in your yeah. life and how you can get it. They don't really see a desire to be curious, because that would mean having empathy or considering someone else.
Yeah.
So they're curious about the ways they can manipulate someone, I suppose.
Yeah. Sorry, as we're walking through these, I'm becoming more and more depressed because like I'm just seeing like largely most of our culture has like has a lot of narcissism and a lot of narcissistic leadership. And there's like tribalism, yeah. like the last one you described.
Yes.
Tribalism just dominates our culture, and it probably mm-hmm. does the whole world. But and so it's rare when you and but it's good that narcissism is now like a buzzword and it's becoming like a topic of conversation mm-hmm. a lot, because we're identifying these things and then people are like having like an allergic reaction to narcissistic characteristics. So but
it's being identified, and you're right, it's being identified and talked about a lot more. And this is where maybe I want to be a conversation that's in the gray zone,
yeah.
because I guess I kind of described this. There's so much of like labeling, they're a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And it's like a narcissistic quality, sure. But yeah. guess what? Like, if you're human, I feel as though you've probably exhibited one of those narcissistic oh, yeah. qualities before too. So if I were coming from an incredibly balanced, patient, humble place, which takes some time, sometimes some deep breathing on my part, I might say, yeah, that person didn't treat me well, but I've not treated others well when I haven't been in a good place. And so I'm going to send them love and compassion because they're not acting out of their highest self and yeah. their best self. But for my sake, I will give healthy boundaries, and I can acknowledge and recognize I don't want to go close to this situation. Maybe when they become a healthier person, they can have entrance into my inner circle, but there are requirements.
Yeah.
And that is honest and kind. And some people will still think you're an asshole because there's a boundary. But if you've trust in it, that's different. If you understand why you're making it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like just the best way to live is to not be dependent on the opinions of other people. Like what, you know, that Gary Vee video. Because like a narcissist is like this extreme version of being hyper dependent on like the approval of others to where it like elevates you. And then the people who are like subject to the narcissist, who are underneath the narcissist, they are dependent on that person's approval or opinion. And so like it's just this push-pull relationship where it's like the solution is, well, not the solution, but a very good way to combat that is to just eliminate yourself, know who you are, be happy with who you are.
I have a children's book that came to mind that's kind of funny.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I don't think that this children's book was widely published, but it was called Me First in the Gimme Gimmies.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about.
No way!
Yes! Yeah!
James, are you kidding me?
No.
Because that is not
that's
a book
not the right
that...
one.
There were no Wimmicks. I don't know what that is.
No, I was thinking
what
of...
What was this? Oh my gosh.
No, that's not the name
I
of the book.
I got excited because I swear this is a book nobody
me
knows.
Me First in the Gimme Gimmies is the name of a punk band.
Oh yeah, I think it was based on this
that's
book.
Why,
this book is an old book. This
okay.
is a, so. This was before. One of those guys had this book as a child.
Okay, okay.
So
I'm
me
sorry
first
for
in the
Gimme
Gimmies, and it was about basically like if you practice. They didn't say this. They used kid language, but like there are these little people, and if they practiced positive kindness, gratitude, compassion, etc., they got to live this like forgiving and like can cohabitate in this lovely way. Mm-hmm. And then the me first and the gimme gimmies, like the gimme gimmies, if they just kept like basically practicing that narcissistic qualities of like excessive self-love and absorption and like it's not fair, it's mine, I want it, and like no self-compassion, their heads just got bigger and bigger until they couldn't even carry their heads, they were so like inflated. And how did they learn how to like they had to cross the bridge of kindness and forgiveness? And like it was so silly, but looking back it like really exemplified and gave us a really positive message about why those are qualities that aren't healthy for you either. It's not just that it doesn't serve the people around you, but mm-hmm. having narcissistic qualities doesn't serve you. It doesn't serve you well, and how to like heal from that. And one of the quotes on the back was so funny. It was like, Billy, age 7. I hate this book because it tells me I need to be a good person. And something like, it's teach saying that I have to be nice and I don't like it.
That's funny. What's Billy up to nowadays?
Billy's incarcerated.
Oh,
Billy didn't get the message.
I was hoping he went the other way. He grew up to be Mr. Rogers. Me First and Gimme Gimme. Okay, so I don't know if you're familiar with punk rock, but do you know who NoFX is? Okay. Zach, do you know who NoFX is?
Of course.
Okay. Yeah, I think Fat Mike, the lead singer, did a side project called Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. I'm pretty sure.
No, I think you're very right, because
okay.
I knew that there was a punk band named it,
okay.
and I just didn't look into it.
No, that's why it like rang a bell when you said it. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes,
yeah.
Somewhere, that's clicking somewhere in my brain.
Yeah. This is maybe my parting thought when it comes to narcissism, because like you were talking about your frustration with like society and what you're realizing when it comes to society in this conversation. And I feel like this is part of the message we want for this community we're creating.
Yeah.
Vulnerability is part of being honest mm-hmm. and being real. And that is something that is so scary and that like a narcissistic, they cannot handle it. They can't handle being honest and real with themselves, much less with others. So lying allows them to be more comfortable. There's a real inability for discomfort. And so they alter their reality and therefore convince others and gaslight others to alter their reality for them to still feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And it's a toxic quality. It's incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to have relationships with someone who is a narcissist. Most relationship experts would say very much proceed with caution. A lot of boundaries are needed. And most people who are diagnosed with actual personality disorder, of narcissistic personality disorder, they struggle with having self-awareness and improving their relationships. It is a rare percentage that do want help. That doesn't mean it's impossible.
Yeah.
So if you have that diagnosis, I'm not saying it's impossible, but when those qualities of being self-aware and having empathy don't come naturally, it means it's a challenge to develop.
For sure. It's so crazy because, I mean, okay, have you watched it's a new series on Netflix, The Murdoch Murders?
No, I saw it's trending.
Yeah, I watched. It's only 3 episodes, oh, okay. So it's easy. But it's basically, spoiler alert, but they cover up like all these evil things that they've done, and all because they don't want to appear a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you guys just knew how cool it was to just be vulnerable, like, you wouldn't have had to murder these people, you know? And it's crazy the lengths people will go to, the actual, like, horrible things they will do to hide their bad stuff, when it's like, just...
You said it so in such a simple way that sometimes, like, a slightly inappropriate SNL clip or something in my head pops up when someone says something funny, and I pictured almost like... like a Sesame Street scene, like they're pulling bodies away. And James is like, hey, guys, you don't need to kill people and murder them. Just be vulnerable.
Oh, my gosh. You just came up with a new sketch.
Like
pulling bodies. Hey, guys, what are we doing here?
Didn't you know?
Don't you know the power of vulnerability?
Yeah. Just submit to the strippers.
It can save lives. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, come on out, strippers. Yeah. This is Shelly, Cinnamon, and Bubbles.
You have nothing to be ashamed of here.
Come on out, Shelly. Oh gosh, there's so much stuff there.
I checked out the Me First and the Gimme Gimme Band for you guys.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to let you know that, fitting with your topic, they on their website say that they're the best band in the world.
Well, here's the thing though. They're if it's reality. Like, what if they are the best band in the world, like, factually, you know?
Show me their Grammys.
Grammys are so subjective.
Oh, well, here we go. Here we go. Don't say that
like, The Weeknd has never even been invited to the Grammys, and he is a superstar in my mind.
I mean, sorry. I don't know. I don't feel like I know enough about this topic. Just drink my water now. Okay. If we're having a conversation about narcissists, we can't skip over two of their key little brain trap tricks that they'll try to play. And these are very buzzword types of things, but gaslighting and love bombing.
Yes.
I feel like those are being talked about a lot, and a lot of people don't understand quite what it is. So love bombing has a lot to do with giving this exaggerated big display of affection and love and attention that is so, it's like drinking the Kool-Aid. Oh my gosh, like, it's possible for someone to like love and adore me this much. And and then that ends up actually being the claws of control and manipulation that then it's suddenly pulled away and now you're hungry for more.
It's exactly what the one relationship that I was referencing back to.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it was
familiar.
Like.
Familiar. I have an example as well with like gifts, and I'm gonna write a song. I had a thing for musicians, hence I'm still with a musician. Sorry, Annie. Someone else wrote me a song. I don't know if I've told you that, but I'm telling you right now.
Oh no.
You okay with that, Zach?
Yeah.
Okay, he's fine.
he's leaving.
He's leaving. No, Zach, he's gone. No, I'm just okay, so yeah, like love bombing in a previous relationship where someone was giving like so much affection and attention and putting so much energy into it. And then like that isn't possible. The momentum can't sustain.
Yeah.
And for them, it's a plot. It is just a part of the plot to have more manipulation and control. A good example is even like, if we live in a really dry climate, so in the summer when there's a day of rain, we're all kind of like, it feels good. Yeah. It cools off. It feels nice. If it didn't stop raining, like, we would have flooding issues. There'd be problems.
Yeah.
And so this love bomb is like, it's uncomfortable for some people too.
Yeah.
But someone who definitely grew up, someone who could be susceptible, excuse me, to love bombing, they probably didn't have a lot of affirmation or attention as a child. So it's kind of like, I'm so thirsty. I am dehydrated. So this rain, I can just drink it up. Like, yeah. I'm wonderful. It's actually happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, you're absolutely what I experienced. Yeah, because I grew up without affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
And this person came along and would love bomb me constantly. And so, like, but one thing I noticed with her was that every time I would, like, want to leave the relationship, it would, the compliments would just come in, like, a thousandfold, you know. But then pretty quickly I started to notice, like, you're just trying to manipulate me, you know. And so then after a while the compliments were just like, I don't believe a thing that you're saying, you know.
Yeah, I mean, eventually, exactly, it assess whether this person has integrity, that what they say, there's a follow through in that, or there's an effort, or there's consistency. I think that's a clear way to, that's a good starting point to reflect on, I guess, if you're wondering, am I in a relationship with a narcissist? Is this person a narcissist?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the average person can mess up. If I say I'm going to be here at 10 o'clock and I'm here at 10:10, like, that's a mess up. There's like, that wouldn't be an example of a lack of integrity. That's just like, you're human. But yeah, if there's consistently, they're not, there's clearly no evidence that they're trying.
Yeah.
That's different. That's pervasive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then gaslighting. So gaslighting is where someone is going to attempt to undermine someone's reality or their experience. That didn't happen. You don't feel that way.
Yeah.
No, this is what happened. And that we are blowing it up out of proportion. This, it was just a tiny thing like this. So you're going to see a lot of minimizing, denial of reality, blaming, discrediting. Like, you don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, making you think that you can't trust your own thoughts.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you could see how these different dynamics, these different tools and tricks, like I said, that a narcissist uses so, like, easily and seamlessly, that it can create a very stuck place for someone who might genuinely trust and want to believe in the goodness of humanity, which I think is the majority of humans.
Yeah. So, okay, how, because for someone to be that, to that point where they it's like second nature for them to use these tactics, love bombing and gaslighting for control, like, they had to have had, like, a ton of, like, trauma or something, right? To where they just, it's become, like, their second language.
To some degree, I mean, that example with the family member that I said, I think exactly that was how they learned to get that need met, and they never figured out another way to have, like, attention and affirmation. It only came from being a victim in that example. So again, like, nature versus nurture, it is partially that those qualities could be somewhat inherited from a parent, and also that it is cultivated. I think more so it's cultivated. I love the example when it comes to, like, inherited qualities with mental health. It's like you're planting the seed, the DNA in biology is planting the seed, but the environment you're in waters it and gives it sunshine.
Oh.
So there might be a planted seed of, like, your dad is a narcissist, and so that seed is planted, but if he wasn't really in the picture and you were raised by mom and stepdad or whatever, you had enough loving, caring adults even to balance that for you, balance the trauma in your life, your outcome is going to be better.
The seed becomes a weed.
Look at that.
Ah.
But if a child grows up in that home and they don't have any kind of healthy outlet and they just internalize what's going on in this narcissistic stew of their home life.
Yeah, then they learn how to survive.
Yeah. Narcissism oftentimes is survival gone awry.
It's so heartbreaking just all around. Like, because I know that, like, narcissists will just become, they'll create this life for themselves where it's just so much deception and, like, harm and hurt, but it came from a place of deception and harm and hurt. So then, like, eventually they kind of get found out or something sometimes, and then it just blows up on them and they're, like, cast out of society. And I'm painting a really detailed picture, but
I feel like this is an archetype. I feel like this is a common theme that does come up.
Yeah, well, I'm actually talking about a specific person. But and it's just heartbreaking because then you're like, well, they never wanted to be there, but they found themselves like it was like a compulsion for them, you know, to live that way.
Yeah. Well, we're talking more specifically about attention when it comes to the narcissist. And okay. I think that that is a key point, because I guess what you're saying is this person, this scenario. Yeah. If you were starved of as a child of getting this affirmation from a parent that you are doing well, that I'm always here, that I'm proud of you, that I think like that when you walk in the room, I light up as a parent. Like, that's important for kids. Mm-hmm. They're paying attention. Do you see me? Do you really see me?
Yeah.
And if that need, that emotional need isn't being met, you're going to find ways. That's why kids act out. Yeah. You know, they're acting out in, I'm going to make a mess then, because you're not actually looking at me and paying attention to me. It's the attention, whether positive or negative, that's still a need.
Yeah.
So for narcissists, they've realized, I get attention if I'm this way. Yeah. I get attention if I'm that way. And they can be very charismatic. Like, why would I be in a relationship with a narcissist? Or why do these narcissists have people even around them? They can be very charismatic.
Yeah.
They can read the energy of a room without caring about the people. And so they can, they're picking up on their goal is to have manipulation and control. They're still very observant about the people around them. And then they're tailoring what they do in order to meet their goal. But their goal is never the same thing as yours.
Yeah.
A quote that was from a movie, The Talented Mr. Ripley, kind of highlights some of what I'm saying. Have you seen it?
No.
It's been a long time since I've seen it. Yeah. But it's better to be a fake somebody than a real nobody. Mm. That was Matt Damon's character in that movie. It's better to be a fake somebody than a real nobody. That is the mindset of a narcissist. And so that grandiose sense of importance, it's all a part of this web they're weaving for themselves, too.
Yeah.
The Tinder swindler, that reminds me of someone that we would classify as a narcissist. That was a Netflix one. Oh, that was a good one.
I need to watch it.
Yeah, that was definitely a grandiose narcissism example. Okay. This guy would like get money, kind of create this whole vision for women of being able to take them places on his private jet. And it was just collecting enough money to show, give an idea before he was like, all my money's tied up in my company. I need yours over and over again, like using these women in relationships with this idea of love bombing, a lot of gaslighting. Anyways, it's a good example of these traits we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's important for us to understand, but if you are in a relationship or you love someone who's a narcissist, please learn to have healthy boundaries with them.
Yeah.
Please understand what's in your control and out of your control. It's crazy making to feel like we have the ability to control or fix someone or to even heal them. Because if we love someone who's a narcissist, it's a sadness that they've gone through some kind of a trauma that's affected them. If that's the case, you can be sad and hurt for them and also have healthy boundaries so that you're not sucked into their traps.
Yeah. The one thing that I'm thinking of as you're saying that is like the type of person that typically falls for a narcissist, which I mean, could be anyone, honestly, but, I don't know. I this is just a question, but like, would you say, to overcome, because like, if when you're with a narcissist, you feel like that's like your world. Like, if you leave them, then your life is over, basically, like a cult, you know. And so, would you say that a good strategy to overcome that is to like really identify like ways for self-love or something?
Yeah, I think low self-worth is one driving factor that can have somebody easily believing whatever gaslighting story the narcissist is saying. And healthy boundaries are an act of self-love. So it's saying, I love my peace of mind, my energy, my reality that I believe in. I trust my reality more than I do whatever need I think you're filling.
Yeah.
And to also see that that's not really love. Like if it's in a romantic sense.
Well, yeah. Cause like one fear that I have right now is that somebody is going to listen to this and think, oh my gosh, I'm with a narcissist and mm-hmm. like they identify all these things and they realize maybe it clicks, they need to like end that relationship, but then mm-hmm. like, how do I do this? Like abuse, like
yeah,
a,
I've
women
been there.
Who are abused.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's a big one.
I remember in a really unhealthy and toxic relationship with a lot of emotional manipulation, hiding not just in my room, not just in my bathroom, but in the closet that is in my bathroom in my bedroom with the door closed on the floor.
Oh my gosh.
Like crying and realizing there's nothing I can do. I can't fix this. This is beyond repair. This person doesn't want connection and understanding. They don't want the healthy version of things. That's not a possibility for me here.
Yeah.
What's in my control then? If you get to the point where you can see that, like, you're living in your own fantasy, what's in my control is figuring out how to love myself enough to say that that's not okay, that yeah. that's not the way that I want to spend my life, that that's not the conditions that are all right for me to thrive, and that I need to then pay much more attention to what is needed. And that's step one. So if that means being more curious about who are the friends you trust who you can go to,
yeah,
if that means being curious about counseling services
mm-hmm.
or just making a phone call to a domestic violence shelter, if that's what's needed, if it's that unhealthy, being curious is okay. You can lean in to be curious and still sit with whether you need to take action, because sometimes the idea of needing to jump to it stops people. Be curious. Yeah. That's my answer. All right. It is time for our advice segment of our episode. And with this person, Ava is her name, but well, we're going to refer to her as Ava.
It's not a real name.
It's not her real name. I've changed the
name.
What
is her real name?
Her real name is Google her. And I've changed the names of everyone in the story for privacy. We often do that. So if you are thinking about writing in for advice, please do not hesitate when it comes to that. We want to make sure that you feel comfortable.
Okay.
And once again, this is not a replacement for mental health therapy. Please consult a mental health care provider if that's what you're needing. This is an opportunity to reflect and hear more about our thoughts on a particular situation with what we know. I also had to contact Ava to ask for a little bit more background information because I wanted to give the most appropriate advice for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she says, I've been dating a single dad, Hunter, and as things have become more serious, there's been growing tension with his kiddo's mom, Sarah. From what Hunter has shared, Sarah has been manipulative and intimidating when it becomes clear he's interested in someone else. She threatens to take the child or reduce time from Hunter. What should I do? And after speaking with Ava, I asked for a little bit more detail in the manipulation and intimidation that she's picked up on. And it sounds very much like there's a lot of gaslighting Hunter about what is or isn't happening and just really creating a lot of tension. And then that's trickling into how Ava and I would imagine even like their level of commitment or interest at this point between Ava and Hunter, because this is so stressful. So that's the scenario. Let's talk a little bit more and think, be thoughtful about how we can help her out. So, man, as someone who was not only the kiddo in a blended family, but now I'm also a bonus parent in a blended family, this hits me in a few different ways. And you are kind of in a similar, like you have a connection perhaps to some of this too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my first question is there like a parenting plan in place? Probably. So why does, what's the ex's name? Sarah?
Sarah.
Why mm-hmm. does, you know what Sarah spells backwards? Harass.
Well, that's our answer for you, Ava. That's all you need to know.
why does Sarah have so much authority?
Yeah,
you know, in the relationship.
Actually,
of Hunter.
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually followed up with Ava with that question because
okay.
that's similar to my experience. And when you get a divorce and there's children involved, there's an automatically kickoff into having a parenting plan.
Yeah,
if two people who are not married break up, that isn't something that is kicked off by anyone unless they do.
Mm-hmm.
But that means both parties have to be on board with it.
So Sarah
there's
Hunter
no
were
parenting
never married?
Plan. They were never married and there's no parenting plan.
Okay.
So that means that I feel that Sarah Hunter probably doesn't understand his rights as a parent is one thing. And so he's afraid of this and kind of letting this person jerk him around.
Mm.
and create a barrier, like, in that situation. If he's going to let Sarah have that much control, I'm not really sure, if not have healthy boundaries with her, I don't understand how any healthy relationship is positive or possible.
So then right now, I assume that Hunter and Sarah have, like, a verbal agreement on the time with the kids and stuff?
They have a verbal agreement. From what I can tell with the examples of manipulation, though, and control and gaslighting, it might be dependent on Sarah's mood or how threatened or unthreatened she is with the consistency.
And she becomes, like, jealous of Hunter moving on.
Yeah, okay. It turns messy. What do you think?
Well, I mean, this is probably too clear-cut of an answer, but, like, in negotiating, you have to have very clear written instructions, like a contract.
Yeah.
So that's why you have to implement a parenting plan. And because when a divorced couple creates a parenting plan, they're not just like, you know what? Yeah, let's agree on all that stuff. There's a lot of fighting and a lot of negotiating.
It's really uncomfortable. Yeah, We've had to be in that situation too. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a mediator a lot of times. There's lawyers involved. Like the exes don't come together, and that usually just ends up really messy. So
the best advice I think I ever got when it came to negotiating was from a mediator I worked with, and they said, you know that you're compromising when neither one of you are happy with the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So if your goal is happiness on the outcome of this, you're probably never going to get there. And so, like, sadly, you have to get a couple lawyers involved, and that costs a lot of money. But
I think Hunter needs to learn some more things about what his rights are there, because he's really operating with not enough information, which then just, and I don't think there's enough of a community for single dads, too, actually. That's a huge issue as well. I'm not sure if you feel like you have connection to enough dads in that.
I don't really want to be a part of a single dad community.
No, sorry. I can understand that too. I just mean like people can feel lost if they don't know anyone else in a similar situation.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I 100% agree. Cause especially I can definitely identify with Hunter, because, like, in that push pull, like, spot that he's in, where Ava's probably telling him things, like, getting him all fired up. Sarah's probably triggering him with how she's behaving. And so he just feels like this, like, dude stuck in the middle and with no real answer, because he doesn't know his rights. Yeah.
And then I think he's just getting overwhelmed and then not having anything to invest for Ava. Mm-hmm. So from, like, Ava's writing in here, it's kind of like, until he navigates how to have a healthier relationship with baby mama, I'm not sure how he can have enough time or space to be open to something, because that requires vulnerability. And right now he's kind of shielding himself from being vulnerable enough.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, I mean, my advice would be just find a mediator and tell them exactly what you want. And then Sarah would have the same opportunity. And that person's the go-between.
That's the advice for Hunter, but this is Ava writing in. So Ava wants to date Hunter, and this is all happening. Like, okay. She doesn't have control over what, I guess in my mind, I'm like, what is Ava in control of and what isn't she in control of? She doesn't have control over whether Hunter takes action there.
Yeah, she's just an influence to Hunter. Yeah.
And at what point is it too exhausting for her?
I don't know.
I know either. I think those are questions that Ava has to ask, because in this complicated situation where some of what's been described about Sarah is, I would say there are definitely elements of narcissism, if not maybe like some other diagnosable things, that's always going to be a hard relationship.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so I don't know if this is going to help, but like when I was going through like all the mediation and my divorce, I knew that it would be really unfair to try to bring a woman into that, you know? And so I was like, I'm going to just deal with all this and like get my life all in order before I even think about dating, you know? And so, I mean, I'm there now, but like Ava might have unfortunately walked into a really messy situation that was like premature. You know, so, I mean, she's there now and she's probably like, she probably loves Hunter.
It's hard if they're invested in someone, but yeah, I think this might be a situation where like Hunter needs to figure out some stuff in order for there to be a real chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's our advice for Ava, which is probably hard advice to hear, but it's really coming from a place of care for her to want to have healthy boundaries.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, guys, we actually lost our outro to this podcast episode, so I'm just re-recording it here in our home studio if it sounds a little bit different. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey and for listening to this episode of Delightfully Dysfunctional. Please remember to like, comment, and subscribe. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and wherever podcasts are streamed. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Delightfully Dysfunctional every Tuesday morning. Thanks again. Bye, delightful humans.